I am 12. The 29th of April, 1965, to the 28th of April, 1966. Over. Low Rent Gold Rush by 1,000 Yard Store. Or maybe Di Jones. Thou mayst not dare to think, nor canst thou know, if hope still pent, there be alive or dead. 1. Pandora. Dante Gabriel Rossetti. 2. All hope abandon, ye who enter here. 3. Inferno. Canto 3. The Divine Comedy. Dante. Chapter 12. 1. The 5. Heaven knows what I wish for on my 12th birthday, but it sure as hell wasn't a pair of walking poles. By dint of a few late growth spurts, I had reached the height level with my father, who in turn viewed this high and fitting time to hand me down his walking sticks. The actual handover took place on the morning of my birthday. The previous three preceding birthdays had seen us pair up and reach the peaks of Pike, Nevis, and Donard. Today, Snowdon would cap off this short tradition. 4 promontories, all standing proud as if they were hanging around the semi-final of a thumb-up war cup. My father, a minister by trade, although not always calling, was most often not a quiet man, given to his own devices. These excursions were the exception, and for the whole duration he offered up discourse and counsel tending to my age. The sermons on the mounts continued. It is spoken that on a clear day from the top of Snowdon one may see the 5 kingdoms. The kingdoms of Wales, the kingdoms of Ireland, the kingdoms of England, the kingdoms of Scotland, and the kingdoms of heaven. Then, with this final flourish, not 50 yards from the finish, he abruptly halted and took stop. We sat together and ate our messages. In time, silence on stony ground. No further words were spoke. No further steps were advanced. A swirling mist flew around us as we turned tail and headed back for base. The reckoning from today's adventure was beyond my fathom. Nope, I hadn't the filliest foggiest. Chapter 12, verse 2. Dark, satanic milfs. Home was also a place of more disorientation. The restless spirit that pervaded my father had risen within, and another change of backdrop had occurred. This time, we'd up sticks, decamped and moved wholesale from the gateway to the Galloway Hills, Scotland, to a gated community located slap in the middle of England. We were far from alone in this shift. Enough fellow Scots took sudden leave as to qualify as an invasive species. The call was a newly sited steel plant. It was a low-rent gold rush for a generation who swapped internment for betterment in a mass exodus of social mobility. As usual, the move invigorated my father, who opened his ministry to a diaspora with a crusading zeal and began to build his Jerusalem among the shires. Time ticked and my father increased his flock. Meanwhile, I had a name change from Billy No Mates to Billy One Mate. One of the few boys anyone knew who was born and bred in the town. Conversely, He was a natural outsider, a redhead for one, and a very large head for another, sporting an orange mop that grew up from a freckled face of advanced age, flecked by acne. Most looked on him as an abomination, and he looked upon himself as a red peg in a black hole. The gods may have adorned him with an inch for every year he'd been on Earth, but us mortals who shared with him a sports room bestowed him as carrot knackers. Unfortunately, this cubicle sobriquet would dog him and follow him onto dry land. Carrot stayed with his mother in a terrace crescent that was over on the opposite point of our own. Seldom was there ever any light to be seen from the house during the nights, which gave the whole sweep the look of a Hollywood smile with a missing tooth. I was the only other boy allowed to cross its threshold. It felt TARDIS-esque, bigger on the inside, or maybe that was just because the eyes could never arrest on a single object, as another would wrestle in and switch your focus. Weapons, vessels, candles, talismans, vinyl for miles, and whole walls insulated by books of mystery, import and intoxication. There was even more lure at this house of awe. The pigment that brought Carrot daily trials and torment was also written through his mother, like aromatics through a stick of incense. She, however, shone forth with a translucent grace. The moment she materialized, like an indelible apparition, I wished only to bathe in her beauty and cool down the venerated ages. Her voice had wings and was carried by the prevailing winds. Her lips looked like they could suck the view of a window. "Bill, you look like you could be a rock and roll star." "Well, maybe the drummer." Boom tish. Chapter 12, verse 3. Determined am I now to live all in flame. Although this second home had now become my primary residence, the actual absence of Carrot's mother began to become achingly apparent. Nor, for that matter, did there ever seem to be a man on the scene. This particular discrepancy I intended to mend with equal parts make-do, daring-do, and voodoo. This mojo wasn't going to work by itself. Nigh on 9 months, I devoured, scoured, and pored over those dusty tomes with undimmed diligence in the flickering light. Finally, I lighted on a current that I was confident could do my bidding. I now saw Carrot's old lady as the Scarlet Woman, a kind of avatar that occupied a spiritual office, one I would need to summon, bind and bend to my will. This would be achieved in an experiment I later dubbed as...
"Hang on a minute. Who the fuck are you?"
"I am Scissor Man."
"Yeah, but why are you here? I'm supposed to be recording the spoken word of me at the age of 12 by some bloke called Thousand Yard Store or something."
"I am Scissor Man, and I am here to edit this 1,000 Yard Store's words, as they have written way more than the allotted 1,000 words."
"Just fuck off!"
"I am Scissor Man, and as such, it is not possible for me to disappear, for I have my work to do.
Anna. Trin and Isco Knew by Nick Toupet. 29th April 1965. Tuesday, 6:39 a.m. List 1. 1. Retrieve Observer's Book of Birds, 1965 edition, from beneath bed. 2. Retrieve torch from beneath bed, where stashed with book for the purposes of reading after lights out. 3. Check top drawer. Ensure Hornby engine is still hidden after being completely deconstructed 4 days prior, with reconstruction job still a work in progress. 4. Check letter to Pete Murray of Top of the Pops in progress. Several complaints still to be added about ignored previous letters and further advice. 5. Breakfast. Birthday conversation with parents about plans. 6. School. Of little interest. Look for birds. 7. After school, walk to the woods. Note oak that might be suitable for making chair. 8. Birthday dinner with parents and Isco and Trin. Best friends. 9. Listen to home service and discuss Top of the Pops with Isco and Trin. 10. Bed. Make list of things to do aged 12 and to be finished before age 13. I squint murkily at this list, which emerged intact from the sleeve of the single I asked for my 12th birthday, which is playing in the background right now. The times, they are a-changing, and I wanted them to change. Now, 12, I wanted to learn how to make my own house in the woods. I wanted to fix all the terrible choices they made when choosing the pop charts. I wanted to walk out of the house and not come back. Not until I had cast some kind of silent incantation which would seal the deal, seal me in and my room and my forest in a protected zone where the rising panic of the great no fucking way could not undo me or my lists or undo my ideas for 1965. I decided, after Isco and Trin had failed to convince me of the merits of Herman's Hermit's performance on Top of the Pops, and the no fucking way was pressing at the window until I had talked them down and out of that fetid pop backwater, until I had made the case for the new Bob Dylan single by playing it 5 times, one for every fucking hermit. I knew, like I knew that Top of the Pops was going down the drain, that I wouldn't trust that this year was on the right track until I had carved out my borderland. Specifically, until I had made the shape of the bird on page 12 of the Observer's Book of Birds, which was the black grouse, made the shape of it over a 12-mile radius around my bedroom, marked it with red pen on the ordnance survey map on my desk, marked it with my feet on the field, trodden barley, and placed a stone at each point of extremity. These borders would hold. I walked over to Trin's house the Saturday after my birthday, and pitched the idea at her and Isco, who was also there waiting for my arrival. I sat down on the large vinyl couch, which gripped the back of my knees as though it didn't approve of the great black grouse walk, squeaking in protest when I shifted forward, in pursuit of conveying the big idea of walking 12 miles around my house in the shape of bird number 12 in the first week of being 12. And why, of course, they asked why. But not with any real burning curiosity. Trin and Esko knew me better than that. It rained, of course, when we started walking in the direction of the first wing, after agreeing that we would start by collecting stones between the house and the estimated first mile, as measured on the Ordnance Survey map, that the music of Bob Dylan would be sung and not the music of Herman's Hermits as we walked the borders, it being my birthday and all. Plus, me being far more discerning about who wasn't shite. And, thinking about it now, it turned out that I was rarely wrong about who was shite. I'd been further than 12 miles away from my house before, way farther on my bike and in the summer holidays to see relatives in Dundee, but this 12 miles, the shape of the black grouse that lived in the stones and the crushed barley, was the first time that the miles felt like mine, like my borderland, my dominion, inside which I could try making a fort in the forest. Inside the fort, I could write to Top of the Pops, because it really fucking needed to change and to say no to tepid music. Inside the borderlands, I could keep my promises outlined specifically in my list for the year, to make a new world inside the world some other idiots had made and had made mediocre. And when I was too exhausted to keep making plans, I could just count the birds in the observer's book, making a mark every time I saw a bird. Feeling the outer world crushing me, I had bought a copy of the Supremes' Baby Love, which may be the most perfect pop record ever. And in September of 1965, I played it 12 times in a row with Trin and Esko as my witnesses, and then buried it in the eye socket of the black grouse, the northern edge of the borderlands, as an offering. On April 28th, 1966, looking at the list for 1965, I leaned back against the trunk of the oak that constituted my fort and counted in what form the list actually happened that year. An actual house in the forest? Not exactly. Changes at Top of the Pops to rid pop music of mediocrity? Well, Bob Dylan had had a good year, and I like to think I helped by keeping the borderlands by the placement and walking of stones, feeling the direction through my heels, talking to my bones. By recharging the circuit, offering the essence of pop to the black grouse, I started writing the list for age 14.